From the Professional Disc Golf Association, this is PDGA Radio News.
This episode of PDGA Radio is brought to you by the number 17. That is the record number of board of directors candidates we have to talk about later this later on the show. I'm Steve Hill. I'm joined by Sarah Sinclair. Sarah, a lot going on in the world, a lot to talk about on the show today. So I don't want to take terribly long with the intros, but how you doing? How's life in Nashville these days?
You know, it's pretty good. You know, I'm just like everybody. I'm and confused and hurt and disappointed and all of those things. So just trying to figure out in what ways that I can help as a privileged white person.
Yeah, that's, I'm the same. Yeah. You know, if you've been paying attention to anything going on in the world, you know, there's a lot of civil unrest right now due to the murder of a black man in Minnesota and also a young woman in Louisville and then several others throughout the years, and it's all just kind of come to this boiling point. There's been a lot of protests and a lot of general, it's been a little crazy. So it's made for some tough times. I know that if you come to this podcast for your disc golf fix, we get that. You might not get 100% of that this week. You will get some disc golf, but we do have some, you know, life stuff to talk about. And that's, we'll get to that in a minute, but I do want to kind of give a little bit of a rundown of what else we're going to have on the show today. We do have some news on the Pro Worlds, AM Worlds, and Masters Worlds front. We have news on kind of the U.S. Women's Championship, but with a new name. So we'll talk about that. Madison Walker is going to join the show, and then we will do a little more run it or lay up because we had so many people emailing us with their praise for that last week. We didn't at all.
I was shocked. I was like, hey, yeah.
I got Sarah excited, but you know what? It's fun and it gives us a chance to have hot takes. So, but let's get to the real stuff that's going on. So in kind of response to all of everything that's going on in the world, the PDGA released a statement on Friday. If you haven't seen it on our social media, it's on our website, but I'm going to read it now real quick. It's only a few paragraphs. And then, you know, Sarah and I will discuss a little bit more. So it says, disc golf is an inclusive, accessible sport that thrives on community and camaraderie. It brings people together. And we need that now more than ever. The PDGA, as enshrined in its bylaws, is open to everyone without regard to race, age, religion, sexual orientation, color, marital status, national origin, disability, gender identity, or ancestry. We also recognize that, by and large, the PDGA's membership demographics skew heavily toward white men. While we have sought to change that by embarking on initiatives for women, funding international programs, emphasizing participation among juniors, and modernizing policies for members of LGBTQ communities, we can do more. Black, Indigenous, and people of color, as well as members of populations who are otherwise underserved or disenfranchised, are not often enough emphasized in our outreach. It is our commitment as an association, then, to examine our biases and aim to not just be open and inclusive, but welcoming and affirming. The PDGA Board of Directors will schedule a strategic planning session to determine how to translate these words into action, with the goal of creating initiatives focused on BIPOC participation and outreach. Like all change of this scope, we know it will take time. Our staff and board members will actively engage BIPOC throughout this process to make sure that their voices are not only heard, but that they drive the conversation. Finally, we ask our members to join us in this effort. We welcome and encourage your input and count on your support to effect measurable change. We must meet this moment together and grow as an organization and as a community. Sarah, your thoughts on the PDGA's statement regarding this situation?
I mean, I don't think there's anything particularly that I disagree with. I agree with all of those things, and I wish that disc golf would be, I don't think disc golf is not inclusive. I don't think we shun people of different
groups,
of course. I'm not talking about the PDGA. I'm just talking about from the perspective of, you know, being part of disc golf clubs and all of that. I mean, every disc golf club that I've been involved with on a local level has had people from all different backgrounds. But yeah, they are still the minority, and it would be nice to make all different types of people feel more included and to do intentional outreach in that way. And I think starting with, you know, Des Redding is over the educational program at PDGA. And I think just starting in schools and showing kids how accessible the sport is. Like, you don't, that, I mean, that's why disc golf is such a unique sport. You don't need anything. You've got a disc golf cart near you and you take one disc or just whatever, a plate, a toss disc, anything, and you just go out and have fun. And I think we can intentionally grow the sport with other demographics better. So
yeah, and I think that's the point. I think it's more to be intentional. Not that anyone was excluding anybody, but that I think it's important that we acknowledge that, you know, disc golf is by and large played by white people and that we can do more to change that. So you know, I was very pleased that we put out the statement. You know, I kind of want to pivot slightly to just talk about this in the scheme of just disc golf in general. You know, I was kind of exchanging some messages with someone on Twitter who expressed some disappointment to me that, you know, they felt like they were disappointed that more manufacturers and more pro players hadn't really spoken out about the issues this week. And they were asking me, you know, why do you think that? And I told all this person, they, you know, I told them all this stuff in confidence, but then I thought about it over the weekend. I was like, you know what? Like I feel comfortable. There's no reason for me to, you know, hide this behind DMs or something. Like I feel comfortable enough saying this, but I think a lot of it, I don't think it has anything to do with these manufacturers or these players. Obviously it's not anything due to racism or anything like that. I think it's that disc golf for a lot of people, you know, is seen as an escape. There's this escapism type factor to disc golf where, you know, case in point, and it's kind of ironic because I'm on a soliloquy right now, but I had a listener engage with me on Twitter and said that my lecturing lately about the coronavirus had made the show unlistenable.
Oh, no.
And I'll give that person that. You know, that's, they're fine to have that opinion. But as someone who feels very strongly about saying things sometimes, and you know, they said they come to the podcast for disc golf. There hasn't been a lot of it right now. But as someone who is a person of conscience, who is lucky enough to have a platform, I don't want to just sit on my thoughts on some of these things, for fear that someone might not want to listen. So if that person doesn't want to listen, that's okay. I don't begrudge them that. They can, we have this cool thing where like we put the timestamps on things. You just fast forward through it. But more my point is that, you know, there's that attitude of disc golf is people's escape from the 9 to 5. Or from the daily stuff. They go out, they play disc golf. It's their chance to forget about the real world and the stuff that's going on, right? But, and so I think that's kind of informed some of the lack of, you know, posts and companies and players speaking out. But I started thinking about it more, and you know, the reality is that Black people, Indigenous people of color, they don't get to just escape from the color of their skin or anything else for that matter that's going on. And so, you know, if we need to sacrifice our escape for a little bit to be more cognizant of that and recognize their reality more, I think it's okay. I think we need to be, we need to kind of get comfortable right now with maybe being uncomfortable, because that's how you create change and that's how you can move forward on this stuff. So that's kind of where I fall on that stuff. But on the other hand, I was actually really proud of disc golf last week. Like between the PDGA statement, you had Innova put out a statement, you had some high profile players like Jeremy Colling, Madison Paige Walker, Paige Shu was brawling with people. I loved it. I think you know, disc golf actually did make a lot of progress. I don't you know, this is something, this is all very new for disc golf in general. And like, you know, it's, you have to have some perspective. I, you know, we went out the other day to a very small protest, socially distanced, wearing masks and stuff down the street. And like, there were a couple people that drove by and like flipped the bird and gave thumbs down and stuff, right? Literally like two people. And then there were hundreds of honking horns and waves and cheers and stuff as people drove by. And so it's just a matter of what you choose to focus on. You can choose on, you can choose to focus on being disappointed that certain players or certain brands or whatever didn't say something. Or you can focus on, hey, we made some good steps this week. We have people talking about it now. The Disc Golf Pro Tour, literally as we record this, is doing a forum, an online forum. You know, there's, and they were another company who put out a statement. I didn't mean to gloss them over. So I think we can look at the good and see that we're making progress, but also know that right now disc golf might not be your escape. And that's okay. And we just have to figure out how to keep working to make it better for everybody. So that's kind of where I land on that stuff, Sarah. I we could probably spend three podcasts talking about all this stuff, but there is a lot more going on. Do you have any other closing thoughts in that regard?
No, I guess one of, and this is not to make an excuse or to justify anything, but just if you felt like there were pro players out there, some of your favorite pro players that maybe did not make a statement or didn't post anything over the week, a lot of these people, I mean, disc golf is their business, and I think a lot of them are worried about alienating sponsors and followers and yep. people that are going to pay for their tour, buy their discs, buy their products. And I would say to that, I don't want your support if you're racist, but I'm kind of fearless in that way. I've been known
I don't
to...
even know if it's that though. I don't think it's like, hey, they're banking on the support of racists. I think it's just that they are, it's easier to be non-controversial in order to preserve your business.
Yeah, exactly. And this is just, I mean, anyone in general, it's kind of hard to know what to say right now. I mean, I've just been doing a lot of sharing of resources at this point, and I haven't done like some long post about my thoughts and feelings. I'm kind of sharing it in pieces as I read resources and see other posts and that sort of thing. And it's hard to be eloquent in some of these situations. Yes, I'm on a podcast, but I'm not, if you've noticed, I'm probably not the most eloquent speaker there is out in the world. And sometimes it's hard to piece together thoughts and feelings to put out into the atmosphere of Facebook or Instagram. Yeah. So just because these people are maybe not posting something publicly doesn't mean that they don't care, and doesn't mean they're not doing their due diligence and, you know, taking on the burden of learning more themselves. Social media is not life.
Yeah, right. Exactly. If just because your favorite player or brand isn't outspoken doesn't mean they don't care. On the opposite, you know, there are several brands and places out there that you can support now because you know that they're in the right place. So it's a good thing.
Yes.
All right, let's move on, Sarah. It's we're not trying to be the bad news show this week, but there was some other bad news on the PDGA front last week that we didn't get to talk about. Kind of predictable, and we saw this coming news, but it's still a bummer nonetheless. We are not going to have any PDGA World Championships in 2020 due to the impacts of the coronavirus pandemic. That means that Pro Worlds, AM Worlds, and Masters Worlds are canceled. Junior Worlds had already been canceled. They will all get pushed back into 2021 in their original cities and venues. It sucks, not gonna lie. That's all it comes down to. Yeah, there's lot else to say. But
yeah, it's kind of the culmination of the tour that's not happening. So it seems like, I mean, obviously it's not the last big event of the year, but it's where everybody kind of gets together and they're, I don't know.
Yeah,
it's weird.
I mean,
it's a weird
but the big part of that was not everyone was going to be able to get together because who knows who can travel when. You know, international travel is still not cool. You know, and then the other part of this that we've talked about is like, you know, even if we could do Worlds, do you want worlds without spectators, or do you want to go and travel to a city and like have a bunch of stuff be shut down or like not be able to do side events or things like that? So, you know, I think this was the best move. I know it disappointed people, but I'm hopeful that we will, you know, knock it out of the park in 2021. Now, Sarah, you mentioned it's not the last big event of the year. The last big event of the year is the USDGC. That is still on as scheduled. And that is where we get to the good news portion of the show. It is going to add a pro women's field this year. It will be called the Women's National Championship. It's kind of a throwback to 1999 when everything first started there in Rock Hill. I'm stoked for this. I think it's great news, Sarah. What, you know, who have you talked to or what have you seen about women's nationals?
Anything that I've seen has just been all positive. I think women were, in general, we were just kind of disappointed that we wouldn't have that national championship, but nobody could really fault the hosting club out in California. I mean, what do you do?
You can blame us too.
Yeah,
it's not just the club, it's PDJ.
Blame Steve.
Yeah,
blame his email me. Is just kidding. His phone number is
blame me at pdj.com.
Yes. I think it's extra cool because in past years, women have not, we've had a couple women play performance flight and the open field here and there, but overall, women have not really had access to play the ropes at Winthrop and see how they can score on that course. And I'm actually considering playing.
Oh snap.
I know, because
this decision got Sarah off the bench, people.
Well, there's many other things that put me on the bench in the past couple months. But I've played Winthrop a few times now with the imaginary ropes, like kind of knowing where they are and seeing how I scored that way. But it's just not the same as throwing hole 17 over and over and over again and trying to make it on the island or battling with the water on hole 5. It's not the same without the ropes up there. So it's kind of also in my neck of the woods where I used to live. So it would be cool to take a trip there. And I don't know, I just feel like it's kind of a historical event that I don't really want to miss out on. So we'll see. No promises at this point, but it's a possibility.
I'm gonna make it a promise. No, that's fine. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm really excited that that there will be a full women's field there. Shout out to Innova and Jonathan Poole and everybody there for making this happen. You know, I think when especially with Pro Worlds being canceled, like the nice part was we kind of knew this was happening in the background, but like there was this like interim couple days where it was like Pro Worlds was canceled. And then I'm sure some people saw like Paige Pierce posting on Facebook being like, what the heck? No major for the women this year or for the FPO division this year. We got to do something about this. This didn't all just come together in 2 days. This has been going on for like 2 months. But there was an intervening couple days there where it looked like, there's not going to be anything for the FPO field. I know, I'm sure, you know, amateur women and everything, it's a bummer still. There were certain, you know, restrictions here with the field size and stuff like that. But I think this is a really good solution for this year. I really like how they just called it the Women's National Championship instead of the U.S. Women's Championship. We're actually going to talk to Madison Walker about that a little bit more because she had a hand in kind of sticking, like changing the naming convention so that the current U.S. women's champion, who probably won't be able to come to this one because she's an international player, will be able to come back in 2021 and defend her proper title. So I think it's really cool. I think it's gonna be a lot of fun. I'm sure the media situation will be great. We have a lot to iron out over the next couple months, but that is the good news of the week. Yay.
Yay.
All right. So with that in mind, then, let's go to my interview with Madison Walker. I caught up with her the other day, and we'll play that now. And then when Sarah and I come back, we'll do some Birdie Fuel Coffee hot rounds and a couple other items of business. So we'll be back here in just a moment on PDJ Radio. All right, welcome to the show. Joining us right now from Tennessee, where she is getting ready to gear back up for the season, it is Madison Walker. Madison, How's life? We have not caught up in a little while. I think this is actually your first time on the podcast, so welcome. How's everything going?
Pretty good. Yeah, I think it is my first time on the podcast as well. I went on some podcasts last year talking about women's course design, but other than that, I haven't got to do that many disc golf podcasts, so thanks for having me.
Well, of course. Thank you. I mean, I like to catch up with you personally, so we'll just put it out there for all the people. How's your last couple months been? Obviously, things have been a little bit crazy in the disc golf world in that they really haven't been crazy with not a lot of play going on. What have you been doing, over the last couple months to occupy yourself?
Well, I came off, I'm sure a lot of y'all know, and you've heard me talk about it over and over again, but I came off a finger injury at the end of last year. So this year, even though it's been a bummer that there hasn't been a lot of disc golf action going on, it's been kind of a blessing in disguise because I got a lot of time to rest. And it really did help. So, and I've noticed in my practice, as I've just recently started throwing again since the Memorial, it's my injury's doing a lot better. And I think if I manage it and take care of it, it'll be good. I've been doing a lot of disc golf strong stuff. Always love to keep my body in shape. And other than that, I've been kind of just laying low. It's been nice to be at home during parts of the year that I haven't got to be at home for the past 5 years I've been on the road. I got to spend my birthday at home, got to spend Mother's Day at home, you know, hang out with my dogs a lot.
Nice. What's, tell me more about this injury. Cause obviously you and I have talked about it a little bit, but it is this thing that's been, it's been nagging you for, it's been a good year and a half now at least, right?
Yeah. It was a repetitive use injury from throwing backhands too hard. Cause I'm so strong, but the knuckle just got irritated the way that the disc flicks off my hand. When I throw backhand, I throw fan grip. And it started off, you know, manageable and not that bad. And it got really bad. And then it was actually injured at Worlds last year where a tendon, I believe, was torn. But I never did an MRI. We just did an X-ray and whatever. So they said it could take a long time to heal. It's definitely more of a rock climber injury or more common in the rock climbing community because it's like a micro injury of your middle knuckle. And it can take anywhere from 6 months to a year to heal. So if you're doing what like I did last year and trying to play on it, all you're doing is extending the injury. And so I decided to take the end of last year off. And then the last, 3 months that we've been in quarantine, I've done no disc golfing at all, just some putting. So.
Okay. So then, I know you have a very prominent forehand, obviously. So do you make adjustments now? Or are you opting for that even more? I mean, I know people like to have both.
Yeah.
And the backhand, but have you had to kind of make some compromises on the course that way?
Yeah. I mean, I would say I used to have a demanding forehand. It used to be really awesome, but after an elbow and wrist injury kind of plaguing me back to back years, I lost a lot of the power and started relying more on my backhand because it's a lot easier on your joints and easier on your body. And then once this middle finger injury happened, it didn't let me throw forehands at all. It wasn't injured by forehands, but it definitely affected the knuckle that your forehand flies off of, of your middle finger. So I couldn't throw sidearms at all. That was like actually worse than backhands. So yeah, my forehand is probably not in good shape right now, but I still can throw forehand putter shots really awesome. I just cannot do the max distance destroyer shots anymore.
Have you thought about going lefty yet?
I have thought about it many times. I even have a filmed lefty round if you're interested. US Women's Mixed Doubles, the first ever one 3 years ago. Me and Paige are on a team. It wasn't bad. And I've thought about just committing to it.
I was going to say, like, is there a reason that you haven't?
I mean, you definitely don't get as much power and as much coordination. And it would take about, four times the work that I do right now.
You could get Zach Melton to help you.
Does anyone want to learn disc golf from Zach Melton?
I would love to. I would be more than happy to. He's a much better lefty than I am.
Oh, so my God. He's unbelievable. And his lefty forehand is money.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We need more lefties out there. So that's all I'm saying. There's a couple women's lefties. Not as many, though.
Not as many.
Yeah. The season's about to start gearing back up. The DGPT, announced some of their plans last week to start off in Emporia and then go up to Minnesota and everything. What's your plan for getting back out on the road right now?
Well, it definitely looks different than it has in the past. So I tore out of a Honda Fit, which is a small, you know, hatchback with great gas mileage. And it's awesome because I like to stay at people's houses. I love going and staying at host houses when I hit the road. And then occasionally camping, maybe getting an Airbnb here and there. But with the pandemic, you know, you're kind of forced to live your life a little bit differently. And I don't feel right necessarily about going and asking people to stay in their house, you know, for a tournament. And I know they would probably say yes, but I just feel weird about putting people in that situation where maybe they're not comfortable with having me, who's been bing-bonging around the country,
right,
come stay in their home. So I need to upgrade my vehicle to something a little bit bigger, probably joining Van Life Crew, hopefully just to have options, you know, while tour happens. I still haven't quite felt comfortable with touring yet. I'm actually surprised that the disc golf world is opening up as quickly as it is, but I guess everything else is, and I don't know if that justifies it, but I just feel a little weird about going ahead and starting traveling when in reality, not a whole lot has changed with this whole COVID-19 thing. It's still not quite, you know, in control by any means. So I'm just going to, if I do decide to hit the road, it'll probably be later than a lot of people are. I think I'll be skipping Emporia and the Preserve and maybe even Deglow. I wasn't looking at starting until Idlewild. If then, I thought that maybe August was a good starting point because maybe things would be a little bit more dialed into that point, but that's wishful thinking. And, you know, at this point I'm just trying to do the best that I can with what little information we receive as citizens.
Yeah. So it sounds like you've at least thought about not even going out at all. Like, what would you be doing if you weren't going out? Would you just...
Well, yeah, I kind of accepted 2020 as a loss for disc golf. I figured we wouldn't be playing at all, especially with, you know, them canceling Worlds and the limited participation of international competitors. And, I just kind of assumed that we would not do it, especially with how much travel is required. You know, we're basically little vectors. So being touring players. So I called it a loss, and I had intended on this year just kind of, you know, having time to do things that I haven't had time to do in 5 years. And, you know, it was nice to have so much downtime. I'm super creative. I love to do anything with music and art. So it was nice to have a bunch of downtime to do that kind of stuff. And, I mean, I was looking at getting a part-time job somewhere in Pensacola and just kind of seeing what happens. I've also been trying to go back to school for a while now. So, I mean, I had plenty of time to get the ball rolling, to read, you know, get myself up to date on the scientific literature in my field that I was working in before disc golf, and, you know, maybe potentially get some applications together. I don't know. There's a lot of stuff that time could be filled with, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if I can be so bold as to ask, like, how has all this impacted you financially? I mean, as a touring disc golfer, you know, things are probably already a little bit on the tighter side.
Yeah, especially being a woman in the sport, you're always going to be squeezing. But yeah, it's not, I really appreciate Innova has continued paying their, top tier team players. We have a designated monthly amount. That's really awesome. That goes against our tour disc sales. So it is nice to continue receiving money regardless of whether my disc is for sale, regardless of if the factory's open. And it's been really helpful to have that small, amount. But definitely my income's been slashed hugely because a lot of my income comes from winnings, not necessarily because I'm winning, but just, you know, placing and then clinics. And like, I do so many clinics during the year and, you know, you're always selling discs on the road. So yeah, it's, my income's been slashed for sure, but I really appreciate my sponsors stepping up and continuing to pay us, you know, even while we're not doing what we're supposed to be doing.
That's a good segue. Speaking of your sponsor, we, you know, our big news right now that just came out today is that the Women's National Championship is going to make a return and come be played alongside USDGC. So this kind of is a replacement this year for the US Women's Disc Golf Championship, which got canceled. You know, I talked to Jonathan Poole, who runs the show over there at USDGC and now Women's National Championship. But how involved were you in some of the planning? I know he reached out to you. You know, give me some of your thoughts, a little more insight into, you know, what kind of impact you maybe had on this event happening.
Yeah. So it's been kind of, I would say, a group effort for a couple of years now. I know there's been several women. Sarah Hokum is one of them that has kind of pitched the idea of possibly doing a women's event at USDGC. And I talked to Andrew Duvall, who designs the course for the USDGC, a couple years back, and he was kind of toying around with the idea of what would a women's course look like out here. So I think it's been like on the minds of people for a little while now. But when the women's disc golf already has their own national championship, it kind of feels funny to throw another one there, especially when they, you know, are so focused on the MPO field at that event in particular. So, but it's pretty cool because we, now that the situation has happened, unfortunately, where U.S. Women's was canceled due to COVID-19, there's an opening and Innova, you know, jumped on it, which I think is awesome. They started planning it, you know, a while back. And I think, you know, I know a lot of the women in the sport are super excited to get to kind of play in a place that's on such a high pedestal, because the USDGC is sort of legendary at this point. And it's unfortunate that women haven't been involved in it as much as I think they should be. But I love that Innova is stepping up and kind of taking on an event that needed someone to take it on this year, because everybody is scrambling. And I'm sure the tournament directors in California are super bummed, but at the same time, I'm sure it was going to be a lot to put on a major this year that they felt good about, with, you know, I'm sure the lack of funding and all kinds of stuff they're running into. But yeah, so the Women's National Championship is here, and we don't know if this will happen every year. No one knows really what it's going to look like in the future, but I think it's awesome that they picked it up and are taking it on, and that we will have a place to compete this year.
I know. I mean, you've had a little input on it as an Innova team member. I know Jonathan Poole was reaching out to you. What kind of feedback did you give him with regards to some of the planning or making this hopefully happen?
Yeah. So he called me and kind of pitched the idea that they had been thinking about of doing that, and asked me what I thought any setbacks would be or any problems would be with them having the event. And the first thing that came to mind is, you know, first of all, not wanting to take over what the people in California were planning, the tournament directors and their staff. Taking that away just because Innova has this already large platform and they just happen to have the benefit of it being later in the year. The second thing was, you know, obviously Worlds was just canceled. And so we can't have, at this point, it's looking like we won't have international competitors being able to move over to the country. And last year, our U.S. women's victor was Kristen Tatar. And obviously, she would maybe potentially not be able to fly in. I thought just being a competitor and knowing how important, I mean, I haven't won a ton of big events, but knowing how big of a deal it is for me to return to an event that I won the year prior, and how nervy it is and exciting and how cool you feel to like be able to defend your title and like, you know, you are make it work. Like, I would hate to take that away from Kristen, because winning U.S. Women's is a big deal, and her not being able to defend her title, I think, was kind of not very fair, especially for something like the pandemic holding it back. So I told him that, and we kind of discussed, he brought up the idea of what it used to be called. Historically, it was called Women's Nationals. For anyone that doesn't know, Women's Nationals or U.S. Women's was, or it originated at Winthrop, or not at Winthrop, in Rock Hill. It was where the first U.S. Women's National Championship was held. And at that point, it was called Women's Nationals instead of USWDGC. So, JP kind of threw the idea, well, let's make this about women's disc golf history. Let's make the name what it was when it originally started. And, you know, like let's kind of let people in on the secret of how this whole tournament started. And, you know, kind of celebrate the history of women's disc golf. So
I love it. It's super cool. It's a very nice, like, throwback and, you know, stepping up for this situation. And like you said, giving Kristen a chance to defend her actual title. I think it's great.
Resume business as normal for USWDGC in 2021. Kristen will hopefully be able to fly at that point.
Yeah.
And yeah, we still get a women's major.
It's cool. And I know that was a void that people were hoping would be filled. And especially as the PDGA, I mean, we've been, you know, as soon as U.S. Women's got canceled, we were trying to work on something like this. So we're super stoked that we're, you know, Innova has opened the doors for this and is helping everyone make the best of what could have been a bad situation. Yeah. You know, I see you at hanging out at Winthrop every year during USDGC. So give me, I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit here. Give me one big change or a couple big changes that you could see that would maybe make the course there more suitable for the women's field. Cause obviously that's going to be one of the challenges or one of the things that the organizer are going to have to implement over the next couple months, mm-hmm. is some course changes to make it a little more appropriate for the women's field.
Totally. Right now disc golf is struggling a little bit in designing thoughtful women's courses. A lot of times people think they can just slap a, you know, women's tee pad a little bit shorter, but there are people that are doing it right. I don't want to necessarily dictate to them how to design their women's course, but I do want to provide them with resources that would make it easier. So right now I know the PDGA Women's Committee is potentially taking on a little bit of an initiative to come up with like a sort of resource, maybe like a packet or a worksheet or something that will help course designers take certain holes and assess them for the women's disc golf game by looking at what an average women disc golfer is doing. And so, and in this case, obviously we're looking, the average woman disc golfer is some of the best in the world. So it'll be a little bit different, but still we want to kind of use our knowledge of the sport and our experience to help people design courses thoughtfully for someone that doesn't throw, you know, 500 feet. So hopefully that will help them. And hopefully we can figure something out. I think we have enough good course design minds over doing the Innova USDGC course that they can get something together. I know it's going to be challenging. We all know USDGC is a beast. So I'm excited to see what they come up with. And I know they're hoping to kind of run it by women before, you know, setting it, which I think is really important right now, is getting input from women disc golfers that know kind of what will make the competition the most exciting, I guess is the best way to put it.
I know we're 4 months out from the tournament, but will you go for the island on hole 17?
100% yes.
Okay, just making sure.
I'm part of team no layup ever, forever and ever.
I love it.
Death putts are my favorite. But it will be a bummer though. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love the fact that potentially I would be able to compete during that week, but I also love working at the Edge Village. So for people that are local to that area, check it out. The Edge Village can always use extra volunteers. It's educational disc golf experience. They see, I think, somewhere between 200 and 400 third graders every day of USDGC. And it's really awesome playing disc golf.
So I want to shift gears on you a little bit here. Obviously, you know, there's been a lot of unrest in the country right now with protests. And then obviously, you know, the pandemic has just kind of thrown everything out of whack. You're one of the, I don't want to say few, but you are one of the disc golfers who, maybe it's sometimes few, who isn't really afraid to, you know, use your platforms on social media and everything to kind of tackle social and political issues. You know, what kind of goes into that? And then how do you kind of balance that with the whole, you know, there's the part of it where you need to sell discs and have a certain, you know, image to survive as a disc golfer, right? Like, how do you kind of balance those two things?
Well, I mean, I think it's a big deal and to use social media authentically. I think if you're putting up something just to sell something, it doesn't necessarily work on everybody. And so I think being authentic is what works. If people like you, they like you. If they don't, well, they don't. You know, there's nothing you can do about it. And if the people like you, they'll buy whatever you're promoting. But at the same time, when stuff like this, like that, in reality, that's what social media is for. It is put here for us to basically market stuff to each other. And it's a kind of a bummer because it can be used in a bunch of really awesome ways as well. I share a bunch of stuff about civil rights, about injustice, about, you know, climate change. Like, it's not, maybe it's could be seen as controversial. And to be honest, I don't really know what the heck I'm doing. I just know that that stuff keeps me up at night, and I can't not talk about it. So like, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know if it's right or wrong. I just know that I got to get it out there. I feel like I need to share it. I feel like I think other people need to see it. And like I said, I don't know if I'm doing it right. I have no idea. I'm just a bozo with a couple thousand followers. So I don't know what I'm doing. I just hope that people, you know, maybe get even just a little bit of information out of it and maybe feel a little bit more empowered or enlightened after they read it. Like, I don't know. I know I'm supposed to be selling stuff and doing that kind of thing, but I think that will work on its own. I don't need to be selling stuff at this moment. I feel like I have enough support from my sponsors. Obviously, please go support your women disc golfers, because not everyone can say that as a woman disc golfer. But yeah, so I don't know what I'm doing. I just hope that maybe someone gets a little nugget of information that they feel like they can make a little bit of change, because we, Lord knows, we need it right now.
Do you think that disc golfers should use their platforms more? Like, do you think there's a responsibility factor, or is it more like individual choice?
I mean, I think like anything, people compartmentalize. I mean, you kind of have to a certain extent to get by every day. You can't, if you're bombarding yourself and other people at all times with things that don't make you feel good, people don't like that. It makes them uncomfortable. And so, you know, I teeter on the side of making people uncomfortable probably a lot, but that's because I feel uncomfortable a lot. So I kind of understand why some disc golfers don't share everything, or don't maybe go to the extremes that I do sometimes, because they're compartmentalizing. They're like, this is my disc golf channel. This is where people come to get disc golf information and be happy. But at the same time, I think it can be a little bit irresponsible. And I like to see more and more disc golfers jumping on this bandwagon of, you know, civil rights and, you know, standing up for the planet and that kind of thing, because it's things we need to be talking about, and we need to make it not be uncomfortable to talk about it. Does that make sense? And so I think talking about it more, even in our channels where we've compartmentalized happiness, I think it's important to maybe bring that there, and it makes it less difficult to talk about. So,
you know, obviously disc golf prides itself on being this open and welcoming sport, but you know, it's also no secret that it's predominantly played by white people. Mm-hmm. You know, what do you think that disc golfers can do to try and be more welcoming you know, Black, Indigenous, people of color? Like, I know that's kind of a big question, but what's your thoughts on that?
I mean, so I've definitely, admittedly, not been outspoken at all about any sort of Black Lives Matter or any sort of BIPOC movement at all in the past. I've super focused on women's initiatives in the sport. And I think there's some carryover there. I think there's some things that we could do, but I struggle even figuring out how to get more women on the course. And that's half of our population on the planet, you know? So, and that is a huge number that we are like not able to get involved. And I rack my brain trying to figure out what to do and how to do it. So, and being a woman, I feel like I can more easily do that. Now, I am not a Black person, so I honestly have no clue what I'm doing. It's so new to me, and it's so different, and it's something that I'm just now kind of owning up to and trying to figure out what to do. And so this is definitely a new adventure, I guess. And it's something that I've started talking about and thinking about more regularly, and I have no idea what it looks like, but I do know, like women's disc golf, I've gotten to watch that grow a little bit in the past few years. I think we can do more to get more of a variety of types of people playing disc golf. I mean, it seems bizarre to me that disc golf would be a heavily white sport, because it is so accessible. You don't necessarily have to have, you know, anything really to do it except for a disc and the ability to go walk outside. And sometimes not even that. I mean, I love the fact that we're doing like handicap accessible spaces in a lot of our parks. So, Yeah, I don't know what it looks like. That is a big question, and it's something I'm just now starting to address, but I do know that it's possible, and I do know that I'm ready to start looking at that in the same way I look at women's movements in the sport.
I appreciate that. I think we all know it's something to work on, but yeah, maybe we don't know the answers right now, and that's okay. Like we all need to just start working on it more diligently, you know? Yeah. So,
and I think right now, the track that we're on right now, I'm so excited to see what does happen in the future in disc golf and also just in the world in general. I really like, I don't know. It's a very exciting time to be alive. It's a very scary time to be alive. And I'm excited to see the future for sure.
So what I like to do with people whose first time it is on the show before I let you leave is to put you through our lightning round questions. So I'm just going to throw a question at you and I want you to give me the first answer that pops in your head.
Okay.
Does that sound good?
Yeah. I'm nervous, right. But yeah.
That's okay. Some of them, it's mostly disc golf stuff, but then some goofy stuff. So, all right. Your favorite course on tour?
Oh, De La Viega.
Oh, okay. Most difficult. On tour, yeah.
On tour. Okay, yeah, De La Viega.
Most difficult course on tour.
Oh, Emporia Country Club. I can't stand it. Sorry, Eric, I love you.
All right, so then this is one of my favorite questions. Most overrated course on tour.
Ooh. I think... Oh, this is, I'm going to get some.
Hey, we just had a conversation about being uncomfortable, right?
No, I'm going to get slapback on this, but I think Milo McIver. I love that area. I love Estacada. I love Milo State Park, but that course needs to be reassessed for the women's game. And so right now I call it, and for the FPO competitors, overrated.
I do know we didn't get an opportunity to see it this year, but I believe that they're, at least we're going to be some changes on that.
Yeah.
At least that's what I was told.
It is a naturalist paradise, but the course
it's amazing.
Needs some work.
There you go. That's fair. All right. Your best food on tour, whether it's a certain city you like to go to or a certain place you look forward to.
I'm so basic, but I love acai bowls. And the best acai bowl places in Santa Cruz, only a couple short miles from De La Viega. So, I love going there, but best food in the nation. Gosh, there's so many good places. I think it's gonna be West Coast Swing. West Coast Swing. Okay. You always get some really awesome, authentic, delicious food.
Yeah, Santa Cruz is pretty much one of the best cities on tour.
Yeah, I enjoyed being in San Francisco last year because I got to eat some. And Las Vegas surprisingly has awesome food too.
Interesting. Okay, there you go. Cool. All right. We talked about USDGC hole number 17. I would like to compare it. Which hole is more difficult, that one or hole 16 at GBO?
Hole 16 at GBO. I'm at Country Club.
Over the water.
Why? I feel silly that I can't remember what you're... Are we talking about a country club?
Oh! Yeah, the island hole.
Yeah. Oh, yes, duh. I think... Whew, that's a good question. I think I've gotten to play hole 17 at USDGC because I tried to qualify a handful of times. And it matters. It's a big deal, and you're on a big stage. But I think that the harder hole... I think the harder hole is GBO because a lot of times you get the crosswind and you know, if you throw it bad, you potentially maybe won't get your disc back.
Right. Yeah.
But, oh man, that's a good question. I don't know. The downhill aspect and the low ceiling on hole 17 at USCGC is unmatched. I mean, that is, and trying to get over the hay bales too. It's not like you can slide it up. Oof.
Yeah.
Once again, I'm undecided.
Okay. All right. That's fine. All right. If you were to play or watch any sport besides disc golf, what would it be? What's your go-to sport?
My number one favorite sport in the entire world growing up was volleyball, and I love watching volleyball. My dad referees on the side. I used to referee. I refereed last off season. So I would say volleyball.
I think we need to do a deeper dive into the volleyball slash disc golf crossover for women. Like you, I believe, isn't Hokum and Kat, weren't they both?
Yes, they're
big
both
into volleyball.
Yep. Katrina, I think, played her whole life and is really was a talented, I think she was a libero or a setter. And then Hokum played in college and was also a coach, I believe. But yeah, they're both really talented volleyball players.
That's interesting. I wonder what the correlation is, if there is anyone. Maybe it's just coincidence.
I mean, I think in volleyball, you learn how to put your whole body into a shot. And I think if there's no, like, you learn how to use your whole body to hit the ball as hard as you can. So I think there's no mistaking why Katrina and Sarah are both so effective at putting all of their weight and all of their torque into the disc. Like, they know how, they know that feeling.
There you go. That's interesting. I like it. Okay. Pick any superpower. If you could have any one, what would it be?
I would say it's a tie between talking to animals and being able to breathe underwater.
That could, I mean, yeah, if you could combine those two, you could go talk to some creatures.
I just wish I had gills.
Yeah, that'd be cool. All right, cool. I kind of know the answer to this question, but for listeners, what would you be doing if you were not a professional disc golfer?
Actually, that me and Paige, whenever we used to tour together, played this game where you have nine lives and you list what all your nine lives would look like. And that on the, some really long drives, you know, the 9 hour drives, but like I could come up with a million things that I would be doing, but I think it would be probably something in the marine sciences. That's what I got my degree in. That's where my passion is, either working with coral reefs or sharks. And rays, that's what I really loved, or nearshore coastal ecosystems, seagrass beds, mangroves, that kind of stuff, basically the nursery grounds for, you know, baby fish and stuff. Or I'd be a park ranger. I think park rangers have a cool job. So that's where I'm at right now. Or maybe a fly fisher guide. I don't know. God, there's so many options.
There's too many things you want to do, huh?
Yeah.
I hear you. All right. If you can pick one person, dead or alive, that you could have dinner with, who would it be?
David Bowie.
Nice. I like that one. Okay, good.
Yeah. I just really want to know what's going on in that brain.
Yeah, for sure. All right. You're trapped on a desert island. You can only watch one movie for the rest of your life. What's it going to be?
God. My favorite movie is so lame. And it is so cheesy.
You don't have to qualify it. Let's hear it. What is it?
It's 50 First Dates.
Okay.
It's either that or Wedding Singer. I love both of them. I don't know what it is about the Drew Barrymore, Adam Sandler duo that I like, but I just like the chemistry. So yeah, I'm so lame.
That works for me. No, it's okay. All right. Last one. And it's animal related. Cats or dogs? Got to choose.
Dogs.
Okay.
I have four dogs. I've never had a cat. I have had to get a rabies series from a cat biting me, potentially rabid cat biting me that I was trying to save.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And cats don't really get along very well, but sometimes we do occasionally. But yeah, I'm a dog person.
How do you go on tour and where do you leave your four dogs?
I guess that technically two of them were my mom's dogs. And then I had my dog Bougie and my sister had her dog Dundee, and Jordan started being a flight attendant and it wasn't right for her to have a dog, of course. Sure. And then when I started touring, I considered bringing Bougie, but he is a homebody and he won't even like use the bathroom away from home. So like,
yeah,
he's not a tour dog. So my mom now has all four of the dogs. And she's a great dog mom.
Well, it gives you a good reason to go home occasionally.
Oh my God. That's all I do is go hang out with her and the dogs.
I love it. Well, that's it. Madison, thank you so much for taking the time. I know, life can get a little busy, but it's always nice to catch up. Stay safe out there and hopefully I'll see you in person one of these days soon.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. And, I hope that this golf kind of takes note of what's happening right now. It's pretty, we have a platform that we can do some cool stuff in our sport. We're new, we're different, and we can be the first people to do stuff. So we need to remember that as disc golfers.
Awesome. I appreciate that sentiment very much. I forgot to ask real quick, because we were talking about it earlier, do you have a tour disc or anything you might want to plug right now?
It's not available yet, but I do have a disc golf pin out. So check that out. They're really awesome. They have mushrooms, but my tour series will be out soon. I'm working on it right now. I slacked on the artwork, so it'll be coming out soon. Keep an eye out.
Do you do your own art for those?
Yeah, usually I always have. Last year they decided they didn't want the players to be doing their own artwork, maybe because it was a nightmare to deal with, or maybe they just like to have the artwork rights. I don't know, but But I definitely put a lot of input in it. The lionfish I did a lot of. So, yeah, I try to, but they like to kind of keep everything uniform too.
Is it going to be another, is it going to be a new animal this year?
Yeah.
Do we get a spoiler? Or do we have to wait?
I can tell you it's not going to be a wraith. It will be a fairway driver. And okay. It will definitely still be a naturalist design, but it will not be a marine creature. So,
all right.
Or a bird. It won't be a bird either.
Well, I was going to say, you've done bird, right? Yeah.
No bird.
All right. Well, I look forward to seeing what it is. All right, Madison, thank you again. Be safe, be well, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was good to talk to you, Steve.
Of course. That's Madison Walker. We'll be back here in just a moment on PGA Radio.
So this has been one of those weeks where I've needed double doses of Birdie Fuel coffee. What about you?
Yes. Always more coffee. More coffee, the better.
Yes. So one of my favorites is, of course, Hot Rounds, because it's, you know, PGA Radio Hot Rounds. But I also love the Pond Diver cold brew. I've just been like drinking tons of that. But you can get any of those coffees and anything else on the website for 10% off if you use the code PGA Radio at checkout.
Yes, birdiefuelcoffee.com. Go get yourself some caffeine, because it is what gets us going through these shows some days. Not going to lie. So, Sarah, without much further ado then. Yeah, exactly. So what do we got in the Birdie Fuel Hot Rounds this week? We got some pretty good looking ratings here.
Yeah. Well, this was a very exciting weekend. I unfortunately could not make it because I'm still recovering from surgery, but the Tennessee State Disc Golf Championships happened out in Morristown, Tennessee, and that's Eastern Tennessee, a couple hours away from Nashville. And there were some big names there. Elaine King, Sarah Cunningham, Heather Young, lots of women. I believe there were 21 women. So
awesome.
Yeah, very exciting to get a huge field out at one of the, I guess, you know, Tennessee.
That's just in the open women's field.
That's just open women.
There were more women in the amateur divisions as well.
Oh yeah, and they were stacked. My friend Sierra Schustrick, she played intermediate, I think, and there were like 12 women. Crazy. So yeah, that was out in Morristown, Tennessee. And we had some very, very hot rounds from that event and then the Minnesota Majestic. So the fifth hottest rated round of the weekend was Macy Walker. And she shot a 955, her third round, to take second place. Congrats, Macy. We saw her on the list, I don't even know if it was last year or just earlier this year before the quarantine happened. It's all one and the same at this point.
Sure.
But she's a young, up-and-coming player from Tennessee, and she's amazing. So congrats on making the list again, Macy. The fourth hottest rated round was from the Majestic, and that was none other than Katrina Allen. She shot a 962, her first round, and took the win at that event. So congrats to her. Good showing. Cynthia Ricciotti was also at the Tennessee State Disc Golf Championships this past weekend. She shot a super hot 976 rated round, her first round, and took fourth place. At some point, I think she was in first or second at some point. So congrats to her. And then Holly Finley also played the Majestic. She shot a 981 her second round to take second place. That's awesome. Glad to see her name on the list. As well.
She was on the comeback trail there. She only, Kat only got her by two strokes.
Woo! Close. And I know they love playing against one another. So I'm sure that was a super fun card. And then no surprise here. Heather Young missed her 1,000 rated round by 5 points to shoot a 995 rated third round and took first place this past weekend. She'll get 1,000 like next weekend, probably.
Tell me, man, it's the year of Heather Young.
Oh yeah, and she just graduated high school. So congratulations on everything that you're doing right now. I'm super proud of her. Can't wait to see what else she does. Yeah.
All right, over on the MPO side, we had a couple besides just the Majestic and Tennessee, which is cool. So this was out at the Smokin' Aces Presents Hank Wide Open, driven by Innova. This was in Wentzville, Missouri. Quentin Borengasser shot a 1052 rated first round to take the win there. Nicely done, Quentin. If it's Pacific Northwest Disc Golf, it's Scott Withers, and he shot a 1055 rated opening round at the Alton Baker Pro Open in Eugene, Oregon. he won that event. Keeping it with some winners over at the Majestic, it was Mr. Kevin Jones with the 10:59 rated second round to take the win. Very nicely done to Kevin. And then Chris Dickerson was not satisfied with having the hottest rated round of the week, so he had to have both the second and first hottest rated round of the week.
I think that's a first. Because he played in a...
At two different events, because he was in a flex start.
I think it was on Thursday he played in that flex start. And then...
Well, we'd have to go run the numbers. But yeah, he definitely came up on the list. Yep. I think it's the first time we've had a second and a first. We've had some people come up on the list in two different spots, but not second and first. So, of course, Chris Dickerson, because he's a machine, he shot a 10.66 rated round at the Cherokee Park flex start. He won that one. And then on, Saturday, he just went and shot a...
Sunday.
No, I think it was Sunday. Just a casual 10.75 rated 19 under par.
At that same course, Cherokee Park.
At Cherokee Park to win the Tennessee State Disc Golf Championships. 19 under par with three pars. It's goofy business. We'll talk about that a little bit more later. But either way, Chris Dickerson, as much as I would like to maybe give the Hot Rounds Player of the Week to someone like Quentin Borengasser or Heather Young, I feel like Chris Dickerson's got to be the Hot Rounds
Player. Oh, for sure. No argument there.
For two, the top two spots. So again, the Hot Rounds are presented by Birdie Fuel Coffee. Go fuel up at birdiefuelcoffee.com. Use the code PDJRadio at checkout. Get 10% off your order. Good stuff. All right, Sarah, before we do run it or layup, we do need to talk real quick. We mentioned at the top of the show, 17 candidates for the PDJ Board of Directors is a massive number of people. It is a new record, and it means that people are going to have a supersized one or two or three extra episodes of PDJ Radio when we interview all these people. I better get my calendar in order. So we're not going to go into all 17 people right now because we don't have that kind of time, but go over to pdga.com. It's on the front page and you can read up on all of these candidates. We have a pretty wide cross section of players. We've got from the old school to the new school. I mean, like the lowest PDGA number on the list is 688. The highest is 129078. You've got a couple pros mixed in. You've got Aaron Rodgers, not the football player. Just a guy named Aaron Rodgers. we have an amazing volunteer from Ethiopia. It's cool. It's all over the map. So I don't know. Did anything really pop out to you, sir? I know you probably haven't had a chance to digest all of the 17 candidates, but was there anything that jumped out to you?
Well, Will McCaskill, who is the board president of the Music City Disc Golf Club, is running, and he may or may not be getting my vote. I'm pretty excited about him. He's taken the Music City Disc Golf Club from a 5 to an 11. Like he's done so much. So I really respect him, and I think he would bring a lot to the PDGA board.
Yeah, it's really hard because there's only two spots and there's 17 people. So you're going to have to do some homework. I mean, like you can look at the list and you'll see some names you recognize, and it's easy to just vote for people whose names you recognize. You got a U.S. champion, Will Schustrick, on there. Two Wills from Tennessee on this list. Yes. Dion Arlen, you've got Nate Heinels, the incumbent. There's several people on here who people might know, but I would just encourage all of you to go. There are candidate statements, there are videos with these candidates addressing, their potential, and just go check it all out. It's over on the front page of pdga.com. And then if you will do me a solid and in a couple weeks, listen to the special episode podcast with the interviews, because I think it's important to really be able to talk to these people and get to know them. So, and with that in mind, if there are any questions that you, the listeners, want me to ask these candidates, please send them, radio@pdj.com. I would love to have, some listener questions, whether it's one, a question that can be addressed evenly to everybody, or you have a candidate specific question, send it my way, radio@pdj.com. Sarah, Runner to layup was fun last week. We're going to do it again this week. For those who don't remember, it's very simple. We put out a statement. And if we run it, we agree with it. We lay up, we disagree with it. And it's basically our time to do hot takes. So, Sarah, my first one for you this week. Drew Gibson, after we canceled Worlds last week, went to social media and declared himself the 2020 world champion. Ironically enough, like a week or two before this, I had had a dream that Drew Gibson won Worlds. It was an odd dream. For some reason, I was like watching Worlds happen in a television that was like a cardboard box. It was very weird. But either way, Drew Gibson.
Was it close? Was it close or did he run away with it?
I don't, my dream didn't go that specific. But I do recall that like I was watching it with Paul Macbeth, so he wasn't even playing.
Oh, okay.
So, but it was weird, very odd dream. So here we go. Drew Gibson, 2021 world champion. Run it or lay up?
Oh, man. I mean, like, who knows by that point who's going to be doing what?
We don't get to answer that question then. We're answering the question now, Sarah. This is the hot take.
This is one of those, like, I know. I think if Drew gets a little bit more confident on the putting green, he could totally win Worlds in Utah.
So is that, are you running it or are you laying up? There's no half run.
I'm going to run it. Okay. Oh, I half run all the time.
And we're not doing that in this, not on the show. We can't do that anymore. No more half running in this segment.
All right.
Sarah's no, running it.
Okay. I'm running it. Yeah.
I like it. I'm laying up because I think Utah is, the courses are short enough to where Drew Gibson doesn't quite get that bomber advantage. But if this were Drew Gibson winning 2022 Worlds, which will now be in Emporia, Kansas, that I would be willing to run.
Okay. We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see.
All right.
Next one. We kind of touched on this in the top of the show, but
we didn't really give a take on it though.
Yeah. Players using their platforms for social causes.
Like we think they should or should not, essentially.
Yes.
Because this is run or layup, we need like an affirmative statement, right? So players should use their platforms for social causes. I'm going to say layup. And here's why. It's their own platform, man. Like, I know, like, do I want them to? Yes. Do I begrudge them for not doing it? No. So that's why I lay that one up. Because ultimately, at the end of the day, they have to make their own decision on how they handle themselves and conduct their business. I don't want athletes to just stick to sports. I will be 100% with that all the time. I loved seeing how outspoken a lot of NFL players have been, how NBA players have been marching in protest with people. I think it's rad. But I don't think it's a requirement. So I will lay that one up.
I think there's a lot of players out there who have their, at least on Facebook, they've got their personal Facebook and then they've got their like
their athlete page.
Yeah. Their athlete page. And I'm kind of the same. So I just started a couple business pages for my little side gig that I'm doing. And so I've been vocal on my personal page, but not as much on my side biz page
because I'm
trying to build those. So I feel like, I don't know. I feel like if you have those separated and you feel strongly about a cause, then you should use your personal platform in that way, but I could see them not wanting to use their athlete business profile in that way. But I'm kind of like you, is like they should use it. And that's kind of what I was getting at before, is like, just because someone doesn't post it on social media doesn't mean that they're not support, they're not out protesting, they're not donating, they're not, you know, reading books. So all of that said, as I think through this, I will lay this one up as well.
All right. People
should be free to do what they wish with their social pages.
Yeah. And I think, honestly, I think some of that comes with age too. Like I 10 years ago, 12 years ago, like if I were younger, I might not have been as outspoken about things or as willing to like wade into those kind of discussions, but yeah. You know, you get more comfortable with age.
Yeah, you get a little more swag when you're older and like you
I think you just run out of F's to give. I don't think there's extra swag. I think you just
I'm speaking personally.
Yeah,
now.
There you go. Yeah,
no, I feel like I've been using that that block and unfriend button left. It's just
there
like it's not worth it. I don't know these people. I mean, obviously, I'll engage in conversations with personal friends and family members, and that's worth my time. But these internet trolls, man, I'm just like, block.
Yeah, so, there you go.
Yeah, gotta do what you gotta do.
All right, we touched on this with Chris Dickerson shooting a 19 under par out of the Tennessee State Championships. So here's the statement. 19 under par should be possible. Run it or lay up.
Run it all day. What, because you're saying should be possible as far as like course design goes?
Yeah.
I mean, so what did he shoot? So
he had three pars.
Okay. So I've played this course before. It's Cherokee Park.
It was a par 62.
Morristown, Tennessee.
Yeah.
A par 62. And yes, obviously that's very soft for Chris Dickerson. This course, I'm actually in what I shot at it.
Like 400, like 455 foot par fours. Like how many woods are there in that course?
So it's
Is it all trees?
No, it's a good mix of both. It's like rolling hills. So if you were going to say 455, that might be one of those, like it could be a downhill shot that plays like 300 or something like that. But it's also a lot of the open holes are good for rollers. So a lot of people are getting distance that way as well. There's a road that comes into play. It's kind of like a multi-use park.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Course design. Yeah, I'm running it. Course design is just so all over the place nowadays. It's a hard one.
All right. Well, I'm gonna lay it up. I don't think 19 under par should be possible. Maybe that's partially jealousy. I mean.
Yeah, you're projecting right now.
I might be projecting, but I'm going to still lay it up. 19 under par should be not possible.
Here's the last
one. All right, last one for the week.
This is the most difficult one. Brace yourself.
This is not difficult.
Frosted flakes are basic.
Frosted flakes are a national treasure. I'm laying that one up.
I'm running that all day. You can do better than frosted flakes. If they sit in your milk for 30 seconds, it's pure mush.
No, you're mush. You're mistaking them for Rice Krispies.
Ugh. That if Frosted Flakes is basic, like Rice Krispies, I don't even know. Don't even.
Then like Rice Krispies are yeah. I'll give you that. You got to add some sugar to Rice.
You got to add some marshmallows and some butter and turn those things into some treats.
Those are good. I did that. I've made quite a few different I've made different cereal versions of treats during the whole pandemic. I made some Lucky Charms ones. I made some
please mail me those.
No, you know what? They were a little too hard. Like they needed Cinnamon Toast Crunch ones, very good.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. It's easy. You should do it. I've also had Captain
Crunch.
Birthday
is not coming up, but I will accept treats in any form, any time of year.
I will tell Sean to make them
for his birthday's coming up, the big 5-0 in a couple weeks. So
no,
yes, and he is like a master at Rice Krispie. Whenever we go somewhere and it's like, oh, should we bring something? It's always Rice Krispie treats. It's like our go-to.
He can make them for himself for his 50th birthday. I love it.
Exactly.
All right. Well, Sarah, look, that was a fun show. I know maybe it is a little heavier than people want in the world right now. And I know that if you came to this show today, you didn't get the exact level of, you know, levity that you might like. But we'll try and get back to it. There is going to be some more disc golf coming up soon. I'm stoked. I know it hasn't come out yet, but I'm really excited to watch some video from the Majestic. We're like 2 weeks away from the Disc Golf Pro Tour restarting. So we will be getting back to some of that stuff. But in the meantime, you know, hang with us. If you don't want to listen to the show, on some of these things, I understand, but we do hope you'll stick around and, you know, give us your thoughts. We're at radio@pdga.com. So for Sarah Sinclair, I'm Steve Hill. This was PDGA Radio. Be good to each other. We'll talk to you next.